Welcome in to the newest edition of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson. And in this week's episode, we'll be discussing the NFL Weeks 10 and upcoming Week 11. We'll have our NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack. We will talk about the NBA as we are roaring into the NBA season. And, of course, we'll have our college football two-minute drill. Now, as always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the Just In Time Sports Podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, don't forget to follow the social media handle at JTime Sports. I repeat, at JTime Sports for all of your breaking news and updates. Now, as always, sit back and get ready to learn something.
JTS. Yeah. Just In Time Sports.
Life is good.
Look, this is Just In Time Sports. Come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. How we talking basketball without a Jordan Brown debate? If you got the hottest takes, you better come and make your case. If you win a couple games, he might even show you grace. JTS on every platform, we growing adaptation. Numbers going off the charts, we create the separation. Louisiana till I die, it's where I'm from, I can't replace it. So people minds are obtuse, but I like to be adjacent. Giving my opinion like I'm Nick Wright or I'm Jason. ESPN better watch out, cause I'm coming for the spaceship. We even tweeting on Twitter, you can meet us in the spaces. Highlight clips of sports news, yeah, you gotta embrace it. We never had it easy, we just came from the pavement. I might be controversial, but I like to make my statements. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. His opinion from the heart, he can never show you fake. If you winning or you losing, he gon' tell it to you straight. This is Just In Time Sports, come and get your weekly takes. He gon' tell it to you straight,
Welcome into the show. Welcome in to Season 5, Episode 29 of the Just In Time Sports Podcast. As always, I am your owner and host, Justin Jackson, and we're going to jump into the NFL as always. When it is NFL season, when it is football season, we lead with the NFL, we close with college football. Now, what happens in between kind of depends on the sporting world, but when it is football season, we start with the NFL, we end with college football. We're at the beginning, so we're going to start with the NFL, but thank you for making me a part of your day and for joining the Just In Time Sports family. If you missed the intro, first of all, you missed a great intro song by B-Roy, but if you did miss the intro, make sure you follow us at JTime Sports on all of your favorite social medias for all of your favorite sports needs. And again, this is your owner and host, Justin Jackson. But let's jump right into NFL Week 10. We're going to start off with the Chicago Bears making some waves today as they fired offensive coordinator Shane Waldron. I kind of feel like this was a situation where changes had to happen, right? You cannot go 23 consecutive drives without a touchdown without somebody being held accountable. So let's go through the list. You're not going to fire the owner. You can't fire the owner. The GM is very, very new. You can't fire him. The head coach isn't going to fire himself midseason. The quarterback was the number one overall pick all of 7 months ago. You can't fire him either. That leaves one person in the chain of command, and that is the offensive coordinator. And so Shane Waldron, I think, was end up holding the bag or was deemed as the scapegoat for an institutional and organizational failure. The Chicago Bears, and I say this with no qualms of a joke, no sign of incorrectness, I say this with zero degree of uncertainty, have literally never developed a passer of the football. Ever. They've never even stumbled into one. That was amazing from the gate. They have literally never developed a passer of the football. You think I'm kidding? I'm sure there's some names going in your head. What you got? Rex Grossman? Jay Cutler? How'd the Justin Fields thing go? Sid Luckman. I think he's their best passer ever. You want to know how I know that? In the NFL, in the Bears' history of being an NFL franchise. I mean, I think they've done 100 years now. I think they're one of the original franchises. They have never had a 4,000-yard passer ever in the history of life. Ever. Even in that weird year where the passing yards record got broken like four times, like Stafford went to 5,000, then Breeze hit it, then Manning hit it, Brady hits it, like all within like a year of each other. Nobody ever gone over 4,900, and then like four of them hit 5,000 in like a year, right? The Bears weren't near 4,000. They've never had a 4,000-yard passer in their long, winding history. They've never developed a passer. Right, and so those in the Justin Fields campus go, well, see, it wasn't Justin Fields' fault why he wasn't all that great. The Bears suck, and while that may be the case, he also went to Pittsburgh, who's developed multiple passers over its course of its history, and Justin Fields still sucks. So at a certain point, might not be the organization, but coming back to the Bears, they've never developed a passer, right? Whether it's just they're in Chicago and that windy, gusty rain. It just doesn't allow you to. They've always played in a generally tough division, but I can't even say the weather conditions because the Packers have developed multiple passers. Try Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers to Jordan Love. Right? So they've developed passers in the terrible conditions. I can't even say conditions. It's just, it just doesn't work in Chicago. Now, I do think ultimately Eberflus will be fired at the end of the season. I just think Eberflus may have made a deal, quote unquote, with management so that, okay, if I get rid of Waldron, you'll keep me, at least till I can see if I can try and finish this year and to save it. So I think that's what happened in Chicago. I kind of feel bad for Shane Waldron because some of it, I mean, a good majority of it, I understood kind of what the plan was. And I think that is the case. I think that's the goal, is that with an offense, you want to understand what's the plan. And I felt like a lot of times you could see the plan with the Bears. It just didn't work. And so Shane Waldron ultimately was fired. Thomas Brown, who interviewed for multiple head coaching jobs and was a finalist for a couple of them, is expected to take over play calling duties or offensive coordinator duties, really. But brutal, brutal, brutal for Sam Waldron. But we're here now. But another person who's had their season ended early, Dak Prescott. Dak Prescott officially underwent season-ending hamstring surgery, so he's out. And it was one of those situations where the Cowboys were hesitant to put him on injury reserve. Remember, I reported amongst others that, the Cowboys are expected to put Dak on injury reserve with his hamstring. No word if he's going to come back. Like, no word. It's one of those situations where he goes to IR and if they got a chance to the playoffs, he comes back. Or if the season's over, he rests. Like, no. Like, it was one of the situations where they legitimately didn't know if he was IR or not. And then it comes out today that, no, he will indeed undergo season-ending hamstring surgery. And be given all the time he needs to recover for next season, probably under a new head coach. So he's probably taking the last snap he will take as a Cowboy. And it just exemplifies the Cowboys' season. And I spoke about this, I believe, last week on either the YouTube show or the audio show, that when a player begins to talk, when star player begins to openly question and talk about the coach, it's over. Because that means people in the locker room have talked about it so much, they've either given him permission to talk or he knows, because he can do his interview and see, he's looking around at faces and those guys are agreeing with him. And so Alvin Kamara made statements right around the time of Dennis Allen. firing for New Orleans, and then Cam Jordan tweeted, like, we just lost to Carolina. Fans, y'all deserve better. Like, when stuff like that begins to happen, oh, Kamara said, we have faith in the roster. It's faith in other things that we don't have. Or confidence in the roster, whatever. Like, when stuff like that starts to come out, it gets pretty bad. And actually, the Micah Parsons thing is awful because he basically went off unprompted. Like, yes, he was asked a question, but it wasn't worth what he said. But I'll play the clip for you. It's been shared a lot. I'll play the clip for you.
What's the sentiment inside the locker room, and what do you tell people who are worried about whether Mike will be your coach next year?
You know, that's above my pay grade about if Mike is coaching again next year. But, you know, all coaching aside, coaching, you know, Mike can leave and go wherever he wants. But guys, I kind of feel bad for guys like Zach Martin and guys who might be on their last year on their way out, you know, because that's who I wanted to hold the trophy for. You know, you want to win games and do great things with those type of legends who put in more time and work than Mike McCarthy ever did. So those are the kind of guys that I have so much sympathy and hurt for.
So that's the clip, right? And Skip Bayless runs on Twitter and he says, no, those guys have not put in more work than Mike McCarthy, which is true. Over the football life of Mike McCarthy and over the, you know, the professional life of Mike McCarthy, the professional life of them, no, they have not outdone Mike McCarthy as far as work. But what Michael Parsons is saying is basically Mike McCarthy can get fired tomorrow by the Cowboys. He could be the head coach of the Bengals next offseason. You know what I'm saying? Like, but he's also, in that clip, that's questioning Mike McCarthy's dedication. That's questioning Mike McCarthy's work ethic. I've said it before. If I'm Jerry Jones, I would have fired him on the spot of the interview. Because you interview with me saying that you've been watching tape all season and you got this new strategy to attack and you have been bunkering down, hunkering, watching tape. And then you get to the press conference and go, yeah, I hadn't watched football all year. I would have fired you on the spot. I would have stopped the press conference, stood up and say, I'd like to apologize. Change your story. Mike McCarthy has just been fired for lying in his interview. It is a breach of contract. He has been fired. We are reopening our head coaching search. I would have done it right that second. But instead, Jerry, because that's his guy, he liked him. He had beer and nachos with him and Steven in the house, and they talked all night. And Jerry goes, you know what, man? You want to be the coach of the Cowboys? Yeah, that sort of thing. Mike McCarthy is the coach of the Cowboys. Shouldn't be. And now you've got a player in Micah Parsons who's openly mutinying. Rex Ryan was on the thing saying they need to go get a superstar. Somebody, you know, he said he was looking at Dan Campbell as a former Lion. D'Amico Ryan's a former Texan. He was saying it's a former Cowboy probably needs to be the head coach of the Cowboys in order for those guys to respect it a little bit more. You put on the same uniform. You were in the same building. Not the same building, but you were under the same leadership. You have the same expectations. You've had those expectations and that pressure. Being in this organization, you know, a guy like Micah may be looking for a way out to get you to a different situation. Because I don't recall Micah Parsons being paid. So that could be something that is rears its ugly head inside the Dallas Cowboys facilities. The Kansas City Chiefs, they feel like they can't lose. Seriously. Like, at a certain point, we have to just go, F it. They can't lose. Like, they literally feel like they can't lose. I have never seen this before. They're inventing ways to win. They've won a game in four different facets of the game. They've won a game on offense. They've won a game on defense. They won a game off a coin toss, pretty much, against the Buccaneers. And then, just last week, Denver, great clock management by Bo Nix and Sean Payton, get the ball down the field in perfect position for a Will Lutz chip shot field goal to beat the Chiefs in Denver, and the Chiefs block it. And the crazy part about it is it was great coaching, because sometimes when you block a field goal, you slip through a gap and you block it, or you maneuver around the side and you block it. The operations are a little slow when you get to it. No. People are finding now Twitter videos of that side of the offense, of that side of the field goal block unit, just getting caved in repeatedly. Just getting caved in. And, you know, that person who got washed out, like, he's been constantly getting knocked back. And so the Chiefs went for it. They lowered it all up on one side, and they caved that side in, and they blocked it. Like, and it's just, you block a field goal to stay undefeated. Like, it's just at a certain point, you almost have to shake your head like, man, maybe they are unbeatable. Maybe they just cannot be beat. It's to the point where it's like they're just figuring ways out. You know, and there's times where you're like, you pulled your defeat from the jaws of victory. They are pulling victory from the jaws of defeat. It feels like every week at this point, and they're just continuing to do it. And they're going to get healthy. As Isaiah Pacheco and Aminahu, I couldn't read for a second. Aminahu come roaring in. They've opened their practice window, so they should be a part of the team within the next week or so. So it's just the rich get richer. The Chiefs just keep figuring out how to win football games, and now they're going to add in more weaponry. But speaking of victory from the jaws of defeat, the Bengals pulled defeat from the jaws of victory. And what I mean by it is, at no point were they, you know, convincingly ahead or anything. Nothing like that. But Joe Burrow continues to have these elite level, legend level games against the Ravens, and it seems to be off or not. He goes, once again, he goes north of 350, and he goes to 428, four touchdowns, no picks. And it's just, the Ravens were just a little better. Lamar goes for 290 and four touchdowns. He also runs around a little bit. Derek goes for about 70 some odd yards, if I remember correctly, and a touchdown as well. And Lamar has some highlight plays in there. Ja'Marr Chase was literally unguardable. Out of the 428, I believe Ja'Marr Chase had 230 something. I mean, absolutely wild. Like, he had over half of the yards of Joe Burrow's major day. It was a perfect storm if you're the Cincinnati Bengals into somehow losing that game. Justin Tucker finds his leg. I mean, like, it was brutal for Cincinnati to where they could really, truly be in a spot where they are right behind the Pittsburgh Steelers for the division, only the two-game tiebreaker over the Baltimore Ravens. And instead, they're in neither one of those positions. And kind of just picks back to, you got to get Zach Taylor up out of there. Detroit, however, pulled victory from the jaws of defeat. If I'd have told you going into this game, Jared Goff would have 3 points at halftime with five total interceptions, you would have told me that the Lions lost. And honestly, if you just give me the final box score with five picks, and, you know, it seems like they just weren't going to be able to stop the Texans. The Texans only threw two picks, including having one of the greatest calls ever, where Dan Quinn's quote of halftime, I mean, we got to force turnovers, is being read literally as a Detroit Lion player forces one of the two turnovers. So that was pretty crazy. But if you are Houston, man, you took it on the chin versus the Jets. Then you win last week. And now you're sitting there wondering, how did we lose? Number one, we were up, you know, 18, 20 points at the time. And number two, it is, how did we lose with getting five turnovers? Getting five interceptions. And one was a Hail Mary, so, you know, four. But during four in-the-flow interceptions and still lose. Like I said, that is victory. That is defeat from the jaws of victory. And something that the preseason is good for, because it does help get cleaned up. But absolutely brutal way for Houston to lose that game. And then the Commanders. The Commanders also lost in an incredibly brutal way. They go back and forth with the Steelers, and the Steelers line up fourth and one. I'm screaming at the TV, don't move, they're not going to run anything. It makes more football sense to back it up 5 yards to get a punter more space in Pittsburgh. And, of course, Russell Wilson hits it with a hard count. And Washington, one of those people right over the ball, jumps across the line, and the ball game is over. And it kind of just showed, like, yeah, Washington's going to have these moments where it's just like, as a coach, you probably don't ever talk about it because you're probably not thinking about it. But, you know, Washington's got a great roster. Of course, they got a great young quarterback. They're set up much better than the Cowboys are. And so it should be an interesting divisional race, including Washington, along with conference race as well. But up next, we're going to shift into NFL Week 11. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into NFL Week 11. So we did most of the news coming out of the weekend in our last segment. So this game, this segment, the plan is to purely talk about the games and what is happening there. Although a little bit of news occurred in the NFL, because it would not be Just in Time Sports, it would not be a JTS segment without some news. The San Francisco 49ers and cornerback D'Amador Lenore have agreed to a 5-year contract extension worth $92 million. And also, Jamal Agnew has landed on the Pittsburgh Steelers practice squad. So that could be interesting as well, because Agnew's had some big moments in the NFL. He is finally healthy. So he's on the Pittsburgh Steelers practice squad. That could be huge for them coming down the stretch to add such a – he was an all-pro returner, to add such a high-level return man and receiving weapon to the mix, especially when they make a playoff push. You know, he could crib one in a playoff game that could flip the whole game around. So definitely huge for the Steelers there. But – anyway, enough of that. We're going to get into the games. We're going to start off with our Thursday night preview. It is in our Jax pack, so we would not pick it. It is the Washington Commanders at the Philadelphia Eagles for basically control, or the inside track at the NFC East crown. Now, I could have told you, everybody could have told you, that the Philadelphia Eagles were going to be in the mix late. Most people thought it'd be Eagles and Cowboys coming down the stretch for the NFC East, with the Commanders in the third place and the Giants bringing up the rear. That was pretty much the general consensus around the leagues, around the media, was that Cowboys and Eagles would fight over the top. Washington comes in third, Giants are last. Turns out, because the NFC East never goes how it's supposed to, Commanders and Eagles are fighting over the top. Cowboys are in third, Giants are in last. So it goes a little bit how it's supposed to. And then it is just an absolute war between the Commanders and the Eagles. I expect a great game. I expect two teams that have very pretty physical styles. And I mean pretty as far as, not pretty as an adjective, as far as describing physical. Pretty as far as it looks good. It look like the Commanders and the Eagles does do stuff offensively that looks good. You know, they have motions, they have different intricacies in their offense. It looks pretty. But in the end of the day, it's a very physical attack. It is a whole lot of power. It's a whole lot of zone stuff, concepts where they're trying to wash out a side. Like, it is a lot of stuff that is happening that involves a lot of physicality on the offensive side of the ball. And you get that from both teams. You get that from Washington and from Philly. I think ultimately is going to come down to which quarterback makes the most plays. I'm not saying which quarterback throws the best balls. I'm not saying which quarterback, makes the best runs. I'm saying which QB makes the best plays. And quarterbacks actually a very unique position, in the sense of your playmaking ability starts when you break the huddle. Like, the head coach calls the play into the huddle. Once you regurgitate the play, whatever that play is, you become the playmaker. So you go to the line, checking into a different play, and then that play working, that's playmaking, in my opinion, as an NFL quarterback. It's not just about spinning and running around. It's about making sure your team's in the right coverage, making sure that you go to the right route, making sure that if you are seeing some sort of hot route, you get the ball to your hot route, so on and so forth. To me, that's all involved in the playmaking aspect of a quarterback, because you're going to need all those different things as a quarterback in order to make the team go and the team function. So that being said, it's going to come down to a battle of the quarterbacks. Coaching advantage, I think the coaching advantage right now goes to the Washington Commanders. I think that Dan Quinn's a better coach than Nick Sirianni. I think that Cliff Kingsbury and Kellen Moore kind of balance themselves out. So because of which Dan Quinn also helps on the defense side, I think the coaching advantage is with the Washington Commanders. Right now, there's a positive energy around the Commanders because they got guys wanting and wanted to go there. When's the last time you heard anybody being like, "Yo, yeah, if you're going to trade me, send me to Washington"? That's never been the case. No one's ever wanted to go there. It's the field of 1,000 curses. There's a photo that goes around every so often of like all the dot incidents that have happened in FedEx Field over the past like 20 years, between injuries, fans dumping stuff on people. Like, it has been a wild, you know, situation in FedEx Field, and now people are wanting to go to Washington, which again is one of the bigger switch ups ever, and is mostly spearheaded by Jaden Daniels. And in Philly's case, you have a team with a lot of expectations who now their biggest rival, what they thought was going to be their biggest rival, is no longer there in the Dallas Cowboys. So now you're pivoting to battling the Washington Commanders in a situation that you did not anticipate being in. So same fight, different opponent. So again, we'll pick that game in Jack's pack. Shifting to the Ravens at the Steelers, the AFC North, the always intriguing, always exciting AFC North. You've got the Pittsburgh Steelers beginning their stretch of conference opponents. So we spoke about the Steelers in the preseason, and we said they're going to start off hot. They have a good chance of it. But then odds are they're going to fade. And they're not going to fade because of anything wrong with them. They're going to fade because they're going to play five division games out of their last six. Out of their last six games, five of them are in the AFC North. Now, Cleveland is probably going to be two fairly comfortable wins, but Cincinnati being there and Baltimore being there, you've got five division games in the last six. And even though Cleveland's not that good, they're going to have to battle because it is the AFC North. So we, you know, anticipate that they go 2-3 down the stretch, kind of derails their playoff momentum. Kind of screwy by the NFL, actually, to have them play so many division games back to back to back to end their season. But it's the way the cookie crumbled, the way the schedule kind of fell for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, the Baltimore Ravens have a chance to put a stronghold on the division, just similar to Washington and Philly, where it's like, okay, this is the battle, but it wasn't supposed to be. It's supposed to be Philly and Dallas. This battle is supposed to be Baltimore and Cincinnati. While they've had two great games, Joe Burrow's made absolute history in both of them, the Pittsburgh Steelers have been the team to show up. So that division was picked. Baltimore and Cincinnati fight over 1-2. Pittsburgh get 3. Clearly bring up the rear. You know, and so now you have a situation where Cincinnati and Pittsburgh have swapped, and Baltimore now has a chance to put a stronger hold on the division because they would have owned two wins over Cincinnati, and I believe this would be their first win over Pittsburgh, which all but guarantees they'll go a positive record, a very positive record in the division. And so this is a huge, huge game for the Baltimore Ravens. It is not in Jack's pack, so I am able to pick it. I am going with the Baltimore Ravens in this game. They have an opportunity here to put their foot down on the division. They have an opportunity to suffocate out the Pittsburgh Steelers, who need to win all but, I mean, if not all, they got maybe one loss left in them, two, in order to have a chance at that division. So losing to the division opponent would be very, very detrimental to the Steelers' chance of winning the division. The Browns at the Saints, the Jameis Winston return game, potentially the Jameis Winston revenge game. Now, it wasn't supposed to be that way originally. Of course, Deshaun Watson was the starting quarterback of the Cleveland Browns. Jameis Winston brought in as his backup. Deshaun Watson invariably gets hurt, unfortunately gets hurt. And so now Jameis Winston is the man in Cleveland, and he is leading the Cleveland Browns into the Superdome against the New Orleans Saints. Jameis Winston's sort of like a cult legend. As far as how he's treated in New Orleans, how he is revered and treated on social media by the Saints fans, like his great personality, his bully leadership, is going to be huge for the Saints, who are currently 1-0 of a coach under Coach Rizzi. The Rizmus, they're going to have, you know, they're playing with his name a lot as far as making shirts and supporting him in the crowd and et cetera. And, you know, Alvin Kamara was named the captain of the Saints for one of the reasons why he strongly embraced Coach Rizzi. So that was huge for Rizzi to be able to come in there, communicate with the guys, and have a shot at leading them, and they're 1-0 right now. The intensity that Rizzi has is second to none. He kind of makes up for the lack of tendency. Tendency in New Orleans. I mean, they just got to figure it out, right? And the Saints are in a position where they're battling, they're scrapping. They still, in their minds, and probably in the truth, have a decent-ish shot and making the playoffs. So they got a chance to win the Gators, obviously, but they can make it. But the question is, do I believe it starts with this game? I do. I think the Saints continue their hot streak. I think they win 2 in a row. I think Jameis has a solid game, throws a back-breaking pick at some point, which will secure the victory for the New Orleans Saints. Probably the biggest game of the week is the Kansas City Chiefs at the Buffalo Bills. This has all the making of a classic fest. Every time the Chiefs and the Bills get together, something historic happens. Everybody, of course, remembers 13 seconds. That's just brutal. And every time they meet in the regular season, it is an absolute war between Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes, probably the two most talented quarterbacks in the NFL. Those two put on a show every time they go against each other. And then you're looking at this Chiefs team, man. It just feels like a team of destiny. They're just avoiding losses. Like, they're inventing ways to win games at a certain point. And then the Buffalo Bills are playing what Buffalo Bills do. If it's working, if it's hot that day, it's going to be a long day for whoever the other team is. If it's not hot, if they can't connect on it, it is going to be a short day for whoever the other team is. It's going to be a very pleasant day for the other team. But in this game, I have to believe the Bills win this game. I've got the Bills. It's going to be a close game, very close game. I'm going to be sweating, you know, bullets until the clock hits zero. Then I'm going to wait 2 minutes, and then I'll celebrate. But this is, you know, a very interesting situation right now between the Bills and the Chiefs. And so I'm just excited that it is almost over. It is almost a wrap. And then, actually, no, I'm not going to talk about that. It's in Jack's pack. Okay, that is all I have for this segment, NFL Week 11, the NFL Week 11 preview. Up next, we're going to jump into the NFL betting segment, Jack's pack. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to go to our, again, very successful NFL betting segment, Jack's Pack, where every week, for those of you who are new, every week we pick five games, or I pick five games against the spread based on ESPN Bet. That is my preferred betting line. I mean, I have nothing against FanDuel if they want to sponsor. I have nothing against any of the other sites. If they want to sponsor, reach out. We'll gladly switch to your numbers. But in my area, I just prefer ESPN Bet for convenience factors, because the local casino, the hard building casino, also does ESPN Bet and use their numbers as well. So it's just used to those numbers. But we have used those numbers all year. I don't like people that do ESPN Bet 1 week and then FanDuel another week and then so on and so forth. Like, no, if you're going to stick with the ESPN Bet, stick with those guys' numbers. Or if you're going to stick with FanDuel, whatever. whoever you vote for, just stick with the same numbers. But we've stuck with ESPN Bet all season. We are currently 28-20-2, coming off a 2-2-1 week. So we went from 57%, I think, entering the week to 56, and that is as low as we want to go. We have to start having winning weeks. We went 2-3, 2-3, now 2-2-1, which percentage-wise takes like an L. Because the number still counts. It just doesn't hurt you. So it doesn't hurt you in the loss column per se. But we have to start getting winning weeks. Going 500 last week doesn't necessarily help us. It brings us back to the means. And again, we never want to go below 56% because that is the line of being a professional gambler. And that is the line of where you will always make money no matter if you're, if you're taking on a lot of juice, whatever. You have to take on a lot of money to make money. You will all, if you hit at 56%, you will always make positive. You always make money. But let's jump right into these five packs of games. My favorite number of the week, my ding, 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 my red light, my golden ball is the Washington Commanders +3.5 at the Philadelphia Eagles. This is my red light district game. This game, I think, is going to be a huge victory straight up for the Washington Commanders. Thursday night football, you have an Eagles team that just thrashed the Cowboys. There's an opportunity, I think, for a letdown. And you have a Commanders team that just honestly feel like they gave a game away against the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's going to be on the road. It's going to be in Philly. However, it's the NFC East. So, yes, the Dallas Cowboys are in Texas. But Washington, D.C. is not that far away from Philly. It's not that far away from New Jersey. They're kind of all in one little area. I think some Washington fans are going to make the trip. I think that Jaden Daniels has been playing in crazy, raucous environments his whole career. He's played at USC. He's played at Alabama. He's played at Auburn. He's played at Florida. He played for LSU. So big crowds, big, raucous environments don't necessarily bother him. I think he's going to do fine in the league. I have some questions about the Philadelphia Eagles defense. And I think that if anybody's going to find it, it's going to be Jaden Daniels, Cliff Kingsbury, and that offense. Juxtaposed to Philadelphia's offense, if it ain't Saquon, I ain't trust in it right now. I think there's a lot to be worked on in the passing game for the Philadelphia Eagles. I think that ultimately, if they do win, it'll be by a last second, I think it's Jake Elliott field goal. And that being the case, the 3.5 still hits. So the Washington Commanders +3.5, take the Commanders. Packers -6.5 at Chicago. Now, road favorites getting nearly a, or having to give nearly a touchdown is not something that you stereotypically do. It's usually not the smarter side of a bet. However, I proceeded to pick four consecutive road favorites. So the Green Bay Packers is my first of my road favorites. I'm giving nearly a touchdown. I have to lay in the sports betting term. I have to lay nearly a touchdown in order to get it. However, I don't think the Chicago Bears, new OC or not, are going to score more than, say, 16 points. Therefore, I just have to say that, okay, can the Packers get to 25? I think because 25 minus 7 is, what, 18? So that's 2 touchdowns and a field goal. I don't think the Bears are going to muster that. So can the Packers get 25? I believe they can. So Packers -6.5 over Chicago. Take the Packers. Vikings -6 at the Titans. Take the Vikings. And honestly, if it wasn't for that Commanders number, this would be my hard lock of the week. This is my second favorite number of the week. It's easily my second favorite number of the week. Tennessee has a solid defense, true. But the Vikings, in order for this to cover, in my opinion, has to score 17. I don't see the Tennessee Titans scoring 10. The Vikings have one of, if not, Vikings have the best defense in the NFL, bar none, led by Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator. Schematically, personnel-wise, they're just an elite unit. Even look at it in fantasy, they're the number one defense in fantasy. They're basically worth a wide receiver two in some leagues. Like, in a big 14-man league, they're worth a wide receiver two or a flex. They're effectively a flex player. That's how many points they're scoring every single week for Minnesota. And so I just don't see Tennessee having a path past 10, which means all Sam Darnold and the offense to do to cover this number is get to 17. I strongly believe they'll score north of 20. And so I've got the Minnesota Vikings here, -6. Take the Vikings. Texans, -7.5 at the Cowboys. Hammer the Texans here. Look, the Cowboys are imploding. We are witnessing a team. This is what, our second team implosion, third team implosion of the season. The Saints imploded around Dennis Allen. Dennis Allen ultimately fired. The Bears are imploding around Matt Eberflus. Shane Waldron ultimately paid the price first, but I believe Eberflus will join him in the offseason. And the Dallas Cowboys are currently imploding around Mike McCarthy. You have the injury to Dak Prescott. He's out for the season. CeeDee Lamb has a sprained AC joint. He's battling through pain. Micah Parsons is publicly criticizing the coach, saying he can go wherever he wants. He's doing it for the players. You have Jerry Jones speaking loudly about how there needs to be accountability in the coaching office. I mean, like, there, it is a full-blown implosion of the Dallas Cowboys. They routinely play not as well at home. And so I've got the Houston Texans here, -7.5 over the Cowboys. A Houston Texans team that flat out should be embarrassed. They flat out should be angry. They should be frustrated. They should be all the typical emotions. They should be all of them, because they found a way to pull defeat from the jaws of victory. Defeat from the jaws of victory. Like, against the Lions. It's brutal what happened to them. Like, if they get five picks off the Cowboys, they're going to win by 40. But it's just the Lions kept fighting, kept coming, seeing that it's not imploding around its head coach. But Texans -7.5, take the Texans. Jeez. And then Bengals +1.5 at the Chargers, take the Bengals. This is more if I think the Bengals is going to win the game. Another team that has to be sitting there after last weekend and going, what happened? We had it. It was in our hands. We had it. And yet we don't have it. Yet it's a loss in our, and it's a loss in our column. The Bengals are just flat out, you know, they just need a win. The Chargers are in that NFC West that's always feel like it's tipping over itself. But the Bengals here need a win. +1.5. I think they're just going to win the game outright. You know what it is with the Chargers. There's going to feel like a Bengals home game. At best, 50-50, because the Bengals aren't necessarily a big traveling organization either. So at best, you're going to have 50-50. And I just think the Bengals are just a little bit more desperate than the Chargers right now. And the Bengals get the win outright. So definitely cover the +1.5. But to recap, I have Commanders +3.5 over the Eagles. Packers -6.5 over Chicago. Vikings -6. Over the Titans, Texans -7.5 over the Cowboys, and Bengals +1.5 over the Chargers. But up next, I will be shifting into the NBA and talk about what's going down with the association. Welcome back into the show. And now we're going to jump into the NBA as the NBA Cup has begun. It's tipped off tonight, so I'm recording this Tuesday night. You guys are here, of course, on Wednesday. But the NBA Cup has begun. So the NBA Cup is basically a copycat of the WNBA's Commissioner Cup, with a little minor tweaks due to the size of the league. So with the WNBA Commissioner Cup, they just play, I think they earmark like 6 or 7 games or a certain amount of games as cup games. Those cup games go into they count for the regular season and then go into their own standing. I think of the cup games play for the Commissioner Cup and the higher seed hosts it. The NBA Cup's a little differently. They have it kind of similar to a soccer-style situation where there's group play. You play in your group, and then the winner of each group plays in a semifinal situation. And then the semifinal situation, the winner of that plays in a special game in Vegas for the NBA Cup. But just, you know, some games happening now. Knicks, Sixers, Heat, Pistons is a freaking battle. Bucks, Raptors, Suns, Jazz. The Hawks have already beat the Celtics. The Magic have beaten the Hornets. And then, of course, we'll end with Mavericks, Warriors. Timberwolves, Blazers with more cup games. Oh, no, I'm sorry. And then the next round of cup games will be Friday, when I think the West goes, basically, or the other half of the cup games they play on Friday. So it's a nice adjustment. It's a nice switch up, try and get a little bit more excitement to the regular season. It'll get through the, I think, to All-Star break, or right before All-Star break, is when the commissioner, is when the NBA Cup finals are, the in-season tournament, as it was originally called, or the IST, and now it's called the NBA Cup. It is what it is, right? So the Lakers have won technically the first and only in-season tournament championship, because now it's called the NBA Cup. So next year, whenever somebody raises a banner, if they do it, it'll be the NBA Cup. So kudos for them. But again, kudos to the NBA for trying to keep things exciting and interesting, especially for some of the younger players who, you know, I play for Detroit. We're not going to win an NBA championship. We can win the NBA Cup. You know, oh, I play for Charlotte. We're not going to win the NBA championship in June, but we can win the NBA Cup. I think it keeps those guys engaged. I think it keeps those older guys engaged. Like, if I'm Steph, I don't have an NBA Cup championship. You know what I'm saying? If I'm KD, I don't have an NBA Cup championship. Like, it's just little stuff where it's okay, well, I don't have one yet. That could be a notch into the cap, especially because, you know, LeBron's team wins the first one. But enough of the fun stuff. New Orleans Pelicans. I'm a Pelicans fan. So I'm saying this, and, you know, guys, I was at the preface, if it's coming from a place of known bias, I like the preface and be like, hey, you know, such and such. I know for a fact, without a shadow of a doubt, that this is coming from a place of fandom. Okay? So we're all okay with that. We're all okay with this coming from a place of fandom. Again, we're all okay with that. Where everybody's good, we're all okay with that. Again, purely from a place of fandom. Again, so we're all okay with this, with what's happening. Okay, now I got that out the way. The New Orleans Pelicans have ruined basketball season for me. My NBA season as a fan appears that it is going to be over before Thanksgiving, before the turkey's carved, before you carve your turkey. My basketball season is going to be over as a fan. Now, I will gladly, and I do mean gladly, watch it as a reporter. I'll gladly watch it as a general supporter. But as a fan of a specific team, it could be over before Thanksgiving. Want to know why? Well, here's why. As of 9 hours ago, CJ McCollum is out. Herb Jones is out. Trey Murphy's out, but he is working his way back. DeJounte Murray is out. Zion Williamson is out. Jordan Hawkins is out, and Jose Alvarado joined the list. He is also out. Yeah, that was a lot of players. Think about it, basketball roster only has 12 people. I just named 7 people on the original 12 that are out. It is so bad in New Orleans that Brandon Boston is just saving the city. Like, he is single-handedly keeping basketball fans kind of interested in New Orleans by just being this light of scoring and fun play. And it's just like, oh man, the Pelicans may have found someone here. Despite their challenges, they may have found someone that can help the team reach great heights whenever they're healthy again. And it's just like, what's new? At least they usually give us a little longer for the injuries pile up. They all piled up at the beginning. So like I said, my season could be over prior to Thanksgiving. But hey, again, what's new if you're a Pelicans fan? You're just used to this. There's just stuff that happens to your franchise, and at a certain point, you don't even feel like it's real. You're just kind of like, yep. I mean, it was just. I mean, that's honestly the environment that, and it's weird. Like when this stuff was happening. And the heroes, and not the heroes, and the injuries, were beginning to pile up. You just kind of was like, yep. Like, none of it was shocking. None of it was mildly just... I mean, the pure number... The pure number was shocking, admittedly. That was a bit wild. Like, out of the original 12 members of the roster, 7 of them are injured. That was a bit shocking. But other than that, it's what you expect out of New Orleans. You expect a lot of preseason hype. You expect a lot of hoopla. You can expect all these things. They didn't deliver. But, you know, you expect these things. You really do. You really do. And it's just depressing. But moving on, or slightly shifting gears, the NBA has a injury problem in general. And there's several people I'm going to talk about with injury issues. And then we're going to kind of discuss why that could be, or I have a theory rather why that could be. Jimmy Butler is out due to an ankle injury right now. Ja Morant is week to week with a posterior hip subluxation with associated grade 1 pelvic muscle strains, aka dislocated hip. Kevin Durant is out another 7 days ago, a couple of weeks due to a left calf strain. Chet Holmgren is expected to return in 2024-2025 season. He won't even have an update on his return to play for another 8 to 10 weeks due to a hip injury on a bad fall. Asua Thompson is back. That is positive news. Let's see. Jim Bell still been ruled out. Malik Monk will be reevaluated in 2 weeks due to a right ankle sprain. Damian Lillard's concussion protocol. Jose Alvarado, who, as we discussed, is out 6 weeks. I heard 3 to 6 weeks due to a hamstring injury. And Tim Hardaway, I expect to be in concussion protocol for banging his head tonight. There's actually stats that are going around that said this is the most injured season ever. Top stars are on pace to miss like 1,000 games combined based on their current injury projections. And, you know, it's just out of the 49 players that are deemed stars, like 28 of them have already missed at least one game. It's just downright brutal right now. And I think, you know, one of the things people always talk about, man, it's like, why? Why are the injuries happening, right? Why are these injuries occurring? Especially at such a mass rate. Now, the head injuries, concussions, okay, it's fine. Chet falls on the ground, all right, that's fine. But we have hamstrings aplenty, especially in New Orleans. We have calf injuries. We have a lot of lower leg. We have a lot of lower body injuries. I think, number one, it comes with the training. I think we do. I think there's a lot of stationary training, a lot of, you know, what's I'm looking for here? A lot of drill-based training where it just feels like it's just a bunch of drills. Like, you know, one for your pull-up. You know, well, if you're not getting that 5v5 real, you know, press all the time, you're kind of going through the motions, you know what I'm saying, and kind of just going through it. I think the lack of intensity in team organized practices. One of the worst kept secrets in the NBA is how little they practice. So, for instance, let's just start it off with a Sunday. Okay, and I got to practice on Sunday. Our game's on Tuesday, so we're gonna have it's a road game on Tuesday, so we got to travel. So we're going to practice at the team facility, you know, hour and a half, mostly shooting and film work. Let me see you guys early morning. You get on the plane. So, again, you practice basically shooting on Monday. On Tuesday, you get on the plane. You have to shoot around that morning. Or you might travel that Monday night. But regardless, you get on the plane. You have to shoot around that Tuesday morning. You go back to the hotel. You sit around. You do nothing. You play the game at 7. You go home. Okay. So, let's just say your next game is until Friday. Now we're basically doing recovery from the last game on Wednesday. Guess what you're doing on Thursday? That light practice again, because you're gonna fly out and then go play basketball on Friday. Like, you don't really practice during the season those 5v5 up and down runs. So what happens to a body is when you don't use something, you lose something. So if you're not testing that ankle dexterity, if you're not maneuvering those legs, if you're not doing those things on a regular basis, they're gonna get stiff and they're gonna fight back at you. And so that's how you get your pulls, and how you get your strains, that's how you get these things, because your body for the first time is having to put that level of torque and that level of power maybe at an odd direction that it hasn't before. So that is something that I think we need to work on, just landing at different angles and, you know, actually working on dribbling and flexibility from these coaches, from these skill development coaches, that way to try to avoid some of these tissue injuries, tissue and muscle injuries. But all right. Oh, and it's also the night that Klay Thompson returns to Golden State. And they've had a really cool moment already where Klay was known for his boating. So a lot of the staffers wore captain's hats in the players' tunnel as Klay walked in. So a really cool moment. They gave him a video, of course. And then, you know, so on and so forth. They play basketball. But I just definitely wanted to get that out of the way or get that in there. But up next, we're going to shift to one of the fastest growing segments on this show, college football's 2-Minute Drill. Welcome back into the show. And now we are going to discuss, again, like I said, one of the fastest growing segments in popularity. One of mine, too. The college football 2-Minute Drill. Just like college football, there's like any 2-Minute Drill. We're going to put 2 minutes on the clock. There's multiple things I want to discuss with you in college football. But, of course, we're going to put 2 minutes on the clock. Once time expires, that's it. And we move on to the end of the show. But 2 minutes are on the clock. And my timer starts now. All right, Alabama absolutely thrashed LSU and Tiger Stadium. And as an LSU fan, that one hurt. But they absolutely thrashed LSU in Tiger Stadium. It brings a lot of questions about the recruiting, about a lot of the questions about the effort, a lot of questions about whether Brian Kelly will actually be able to succeed at LSU. It is a lot going on inside that building. It was one of those losses that made you question everything, even go back to previous coaches who had similar bad losses in order to try and make yourself feel better. Colorado officially controls his own destiny with the loss of somebody. I think Kansas State, lost. And now Colorado controls his own destiny all the way into the playoff. They went out, they'll be in the playoff. It's just that simple. They went out, they have punched their ticket to the Big 12. Of course, they went out, including the Big 12 championship game. They will punch their ticket as a top five reseeded seed in the college football playoff. Huge game. Game of the week is at Tennessee at Georgia. Now, Tennessee's starting quarterback Nico is in concussion protocol. They're not quite sure if he'll be able to make it to the game on Saturday. If he does not, that takes some of the juice out of it. But if he does, Tennessee goes in between the hedges at Georgia, and that should be a hell of a football game. Jack Del Rio is out at Wisconsin. He resigned due to a crash that involved things that put him under the influence. So he is out. The transfer portal is supposed to be an absolute NIL chaotic mess this season. It is going to be rough at any and all levels in order to try and pull in the transfer with the amount of money that is expected to fly around. The Heisman watch is simple. It's Ashton Jeanty, Dylan Gabriel, and Travis Hunter. If it's anybody outside of those three, I would not entertain the thought of it being anybody outside of those three. And Florida State fired the offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and wide receivers coach amongst their 1-8 start. And we just sneak it in. Whew. Got a little long with an LSU topic. Otherwise, I would have snuck it in easily. But we just sneak it in. That is all I have for you today. I appreciate you joining me for about an hour to listen to me talk a little ball, back to me, hopefully. Shoot me some comments. Shoot me some at J Titan Sports to definitely bring in more people into the Justin Titan Sports family. But that is all I have for you today. This is your owner and host, Justin Jackson, signing out.